we developed, you know, a lot of money, spent a lot of money on Facebook trying to develop a campaign. We sold 100,000 units of one product on Facebook alone. Okay. A lot of those people got a brand awareness very quickly of, you know, of our product just on in an online basis. That does not necessarily translate to retail at all.
Hi, folks. It's the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Quiet Light Brokerage is the leader in helping entrepreneurs build, buy, and sell their online businesses. Since 2007, we have helped thousands buy and sell online businesses. And now, we're putting our extensive knowledge in your earbuds with our trademark relentless honesty and a few laughs along the way.
I looked into it more deeply, and I found that apparently what happened is that he was laid off 5 years ago, and no one ever told him about it. But through some kind of glitch in the payroll department, he still gets a paycheck.
So we just went ahead and fixed the glitch.
And now, here's Joe and Mark.
So Mark, a couple of podcasts ago, used the term old school in terms of one of the podcasts. Yes, and what he does. And, you know, when we started talking about this particular episode, I am all in old school, apparently, because the old school direct, you know, response marketing is what I did. I came from the radio direct response marketing world. And Walker's not the only producer here. I've produced two TV infomercials, did many, many spot ads, and even hosted one. I just have to throw that in there because, you know, Walker's such a celebrity here at Quiet Light with a best-selling book and all that good stuff. Netflix documentary and all that stuff. Mine didn't make any money, but maybe a little bit. But we're starting to see a trend of a little bit of that old school direct response TV production and advertising combined with the e-commerce world. Somebody's got an e-commerce product and they're driving traffic both to a call center, which is what I did, but now online to a website or to Amazon for the products as well. And you had somebody on the site, on the podcast that focuses specifically on that.
Yeah, no, he comes from that direct response TV market world, right? That's his background. And, you know, we were just talking about this, Joe, but it's kind of like these two types of business models in direct response grew up a little separately and kind of despised each other initially or looked at each other with skepticism. A lot of the guys in the direct response internet world looked at direct mail and infomercials as this outdated dinosaur sort of way of marketing. And the direct-to-TV market and the direct mail market, advertisers looked at these new kids with their internet, like it'll never last. And these aren't real businesses. Now what we're seeing is these guys are looking at each other and seeing maybe if we work together in this cross-channel, there's a buzzword for you, cross-channel sort of marketing, both in the offline and online world, there is a lift that can happen in the online world. And so I talked to John Santilli. His whole specialty is direct response TV infomercials. That's what he does. And now he's working with online firms to help them determine if we were to do a commercial, an infomercial, and run this for 3 months, 6 months, or what have you, what's the lift going to be in the online world? And does it make sense to do this? I love this idea here because when we look at an online business for sale, one of the things I want to see, do they have this stability, this kind of multi-channel approach for attracting customers? And if they do, that's a good thing. And we often think multi-channel, okay, I'll get my Facebook, I'll get my PPC, I'll set up a Shopify store. But there's more than just the online channel. And when we start going into the offline channel, there's a certain amount of brand that comes with it that you can't build entirely online, right? Like if you see something on TV, it holds a little bit more weight than just something that you see online. So this whole conversation with John was, how does he make these assessments? What's been the history of this direct response TV market and how can it help online sellers?
Yeah, it doesn't just build value in terms of, you know, more online revenue, but it's offline revenue as well with, you know, people ordering directly from TV. You can also look at products and putting them on HSN or QVC and things of that nature. And what it does is you've got multiple channels of revenue. It's going to boost the value of your company, not just because discretionary earnings are higher, but if it's large enough, a private equity firm is going to pay a much higher multiple for a multiple channel product line coming from different avenues. That was one of the presentations at the Prosper Show that
mimicked almost everything that we've been saying for the last 6 or 7 years. So I think it's a great idea for those that currently own internet-based businesses selling a physical product, or those folks that are considering buying one and thinking, okay, this person bootstrapped it. They've gotten to a certain point. They want to move on to their next adventure. How can I take this to the next level and look at this TV advertising as well? I think it's a great option. Let's go to it.
John, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast. I appreciate you taking the time here. I know you and I have talked over the past few months about various Amazon opportunities. And I asked you to come on the podcast mainly because your background in this direct response TV advertising and really omnichannel marketing, going outside of the Amazon and internet ecosystems into these more traditional mediums to really boost the brands is pretty extensive. I would love for you to just give, quick background on yourself for our audience and your experience and what kind of catch people up on our conversations for the past few months.
Sure. No problem. Thank you very much, Mark, again, for having me on the podcast. Hopefully your listeners will find some value in what we're talking about today. Certainly, as we've been having our conversations and give you a little bit about my background first, and then we can get more into that. But my background, basically, I've been in sales and marketing for the last 20 years. I spent the majority of my career at two companies, primarily. Those companies have all been marketing. Both of those companies are marketing-dependent companies, operating budgets of, say, $3.5 million all the way up to $55 million at some point in time, and margins ranging from 20% all the way to 100% at some times. I've touched almost every marketing medium that there is, whether that's been from direct mail, direct response TV, which we'll talk a lot about today. And, also within the digital side of things, lead generation side of things, as I said, direct mail, I sent out about 5 million pieces of direct mail on a monthly basis at one point in time. Spent about $25 million a year on TV. My last company, I was the executive producer, in-house executive producer for the company. I produced over 120 TV commercials, that 30 of them actually went to a retail rollout, generating over $250 million in business. With that company, I co-created a algorithm, which really gave us the ability to identify undermarketed products or new inventions that had the most unique attributes, had the most mass market appeal, and were suited really to go to retail. Our job was to really find, filter, and flip, products. And what that really means is that we took products that were undermarketed, new inventions, filtered them through a proprietary algorithm that we designed, and tested those products through that algorithm, and then joint ventured with a partner to push those into retail. And that was really the direct response TV model. Much of you will actually recognize that as seen on TV products, those late night infomercials, those daytime commercials.
So you're the ones that if I'm at the gym in the middle of the day and I see something come up and it's that sort of infomercial type of commercial, you're the one that was putting those on?
Yes, exactly. It's actually a very small market. You see a lot of commercials, on TV, but it's a very small market. Initially, it was a profit channel in and of itself. The direct response was the first to use. It was the first, area to market goods and services direct to the consumer, bypassing retail. The goal of direct response really is to break even or take a small loss. It really has been to entice consumers to go to retail and to purchase at retail. It effectively became the focus of all DRTV campaigns was to air a lot of media, get people to walk inside the store and buy it.
Right, right. Now, in our current economy, especially the internet-based economy, we've completely bypassed a lot of these channels that were built up, frankly, over decades. And we've had this whole ecosystem kind of build up of internet, and we're seeing that direct response TV market, as well as retail market, now trying to scramble and catch up and see if they can also tap into the internet market area as well. One thing I find fascinating, I went to Traffic and Conversion a few months ago, or about a month ago, actually not even that long ago, it doesn't matter. Richard Branson was one of the keynote speakers. And one of the things that struck me from that conversation that he had with all of us was the idea that the idea of all the marketing that used to be the norm, right? He did crazy stunts just to be able to get on the front page of the newspaper. And today, I think a lot of us, we look at our businesses and we think about it in terms of how can I manage my Amazon PPC account? Or how can, for a SaaS company, how can I get the right onboarding process and find the right customer acquisition channels online? What you're talking about is, let's look a little bit beyond that. There's this whole developed ecosystem of marketing that exists, which can really work in conjunction with the online environment. With your previous experience, did either of your companies get into that where you were using this omni-channel marketing outside of the internet to boost the online sales?
Absolutely. So that really is the evolution of the business at this point in time. I mean, it's the evolution everywhere, of course, just like you mentioned. And it's really, I have since left the last organization that I was with. It's, I've formed a new company. It's by the name of Starlogic Marketing. And the reason why I've called it what I called it is because, first of all, everything out there right now is based off of reviews and star ratings, that are out there. If you see something on TV today, okay, the first thing you do is you pick up your phone, you take a look on Amazon, you see if it's on Amazon, you see what the star ratings and reviews are on it, you take a look at the price, and then you have to buy. So it changed, the game has changed completely. Through our proprietary algorithm that I kind of mentioned to you, the way that we filter products is we would basically go through a survey process. We would do a web test in which really put the customer, put our product in front of the customer and position them to act on it. Here's an offer out there. Would you like to buy it? And, the direct response model in the past, I mean, you had 10% of your orders going through web marketing. Today, that's up to 50, 60, 70% of your orders are going to order through the web. And whether that be through Amazon or whether it be through traditional e-com, that's the way that people acted on it. So over time, we saw this evolution happening. Okay, it started impacting the way that we marketed products, the way that we, looked at our marketing in general. We had to consider the fact that 20% of the people were actually going to go buy from Amazon versus going to your e-com site or picking up the phone and calling you. And, and again, there was a higher number of people that were actually ordering off of their phones. So you had to make sure that your mobile marketing was done properly. So this omni-channel marketing, as you indicated, is just so important today for every company. Whether you are holistically selling on FBA at this point in time, and that's when you and I started having these conversations and really what got me excited about this whole thing, which is that whether you're selling wholly on FBA and not taking advantage of the digital ecosystem out there, the direct response pieces that are out there, the home shopping networks that are out there, international Amazon, and making sure that you also take a look at traditional retail as well as international retail is really what I think is the great opportunity for product and product businesses today.
All right. So what you're talking about here is like you have a basic infomercial or commercial. Somebody's at home, they're up 1 o'clock in the morning and watching reruns of I Love Lucy, and something comes on, looks interesting. So they end up typing it into their phone because everyone now watches TV with their phones as well, right? And the product pops up, and we can see this direct correlation now between direct response on TV leading and bleeding directly into the online environment. You've mentioned a couple times that you guys have an algorithm that you run these opportunities through. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure, absolutely. So it really is, you have so many things at your fingertips these days. I mean, first of all, you used to get catalogs from your house. You go into stores and you see products and stuff like that. There's products everywhere, all over the place. In the past, we would search for products through Google, and we would just take a look at products through Google or catalog and find some unique things. And we said, well, how do we find out what works, what doesn't work, what's the best opportunity for retail? And whether it's traditional retail or online retail, they're two different things, but they still have some unique drivers behind them that get people to buy, right? So they got to be unique, all right? They have to be, they feel like they haven't seen it somewhere before. They now have to be of a great quality, and they have to have the right price point to get people to impulsively buy. So what we would do is we would go through a survey process first. You know, my background with, and my disciplines in the direct mail business said creative makes people buy, but also, you know, there are consumer behaviors that make people buy. So what we did is we asked a series of questions in a survey basis, stayed consistent with those questions, and over time became, it had benchmarks that said, this product's unique, this product is an everyday product, this product appeals to a large percentage of the marketplace. And those were some of the main drivers that made us, that helped us go to stage two, which was web testing. So now in web testing, we would do a couple of different things. We would do a very small teaser video or a B-roll type video that demonstrated the product in a way that you quickly understood, okay, I need this. And we put a very quick order page together where it wasn't an elaborate brand type of web store or web page. It was an order taking page. It was built to just take orders. And we would have people go to these, you know, we'd do an email blast of, let's say, 300,000 people, 150,000 people, and sometimes even a million people, you know, and get benchmarks based off of conversions, click rates, click throughs, orders, average order amounts, how many products did they actually order through that. And those benchmarks were also tied to our algorithm, and they remained consistent. And we tried to make sure that we formed long-term benchmarks. Those filtering processes, whether it was the way that the product was originally came to us and looked at by our review meeting, which had people on there from a lot of home shopping networks and people that have been in my industry for years, but also the survey process, the web testing process, those benchmarks, once it qualified, we would actually put a TV commercial together. It just put a little science next to the art of just putting something on TV. Instead of doing just a, what we refer to as, or I refer to as a spray and pray approach, where you just spray your product everywhere and see if it works, it added a little bit more science to it.
Sure. So now with the current marketing firm that you just recently founded that's doing this, what your basic appeal for somebody that might be listening here is that you'd be able to take a look at their product. If somebody has a private brand that they built and maybe are doing well with on Amazon, you'd be able to take that and run through this testing process to be able to see what the possible or potential impact on revenues and growth would be if they were to go to the direct response TV market. Am I understanding that right?
Absolutely. I mean, you nailed it. I mean, really what it comes down to is that through this process, we feel like we can go into any retail store, for an example, and if you have a product line and you say, this is my entire product line, we feel like we can go through an A through Z, you know, process and say, A has the best opportunity to succeed. Z, put it on the shelf. It'll still sell, but put it on the shelf. It's not going to be your most appealing product that's out there in the marketplace. And really, that's what the system does. But in addition to that, it helps identify your best opportunity to go through TV and other channels, because I think that all products have a home, right? It's just a matter of how big is that home. And then I think that's what the process is designed to do.
How long does it take you guys to figure out what that impact would be from a direct response campaign?
Great question. So the initial process of what we're talking about from a survey, web testing type of a platform, I mean, that really could take, you know, 1 to 2 months, depending upon what kind of assets that we have. Or, you know, it could take a little bit longer depending upon if we get any data that says we need to tweak the product a little bit. So if we find out that people like your product through this process and they have an attraction to your product, but there's a couple of different variables that, you know, they may want to see more, a couple of different features that they want more on the product, a light, for an example, or, you know, something better of quality, you know, this doesn't look as quality and the quality that I want. We may take a step back, do some product development, but if you have a completed product that's ready to go, maybe 1 to 2 months to do that initial survey web testing platform. You know, then you go into developing your TV commercial, and maybe you're talking about another 2 to 3 months before you actually, you know, get on the air, test everything, and really are good to go. One thing I just want to make sure that I'm clear with is I said to you that every product has a home depending upon which home that should be in. Through this evolution and this process, we found that some products just belong on the digital atmosphere versus TV. So an example of that would be is that we actually had a product we tested at $10 price point on TV a few years ago. and did not meet the metrics to push that product into retail and do a large spend on TV. What we wound up doing with that product, we tested it on digital because the metrics weren't making sense. We were getting false positives on our web platform, seeing that people were ordering this product through web, but they weren't ordering it through TV. So we started testing inside the digital ecosystem. And next thing you know, a year and a half later, we've been marketing this product digitally at a $29 price point, at a $19.99 price point, and had major success just by utilizing the digital atmosphere.
Interesting. So you talked about gathering some data to be able to understand, do people want to buy this product? Do they like the product? And is it, you know, maybe is there a product adjustment that needs to happen? Can't we just look at how the product is succeeding on Amazon and look at the reviews to be able to gather most of that information? And could we maybe accelerate that 2 to 3 month process if we were to just look and say, hey, I have a product that's been on Amazon for 3 years, say, and I've got 2,000 reviews of it with all sorts of feedback on this. Is there other data outside of that you need? Or is that a good starting point that would get you most of the way there to be able to identify a product that would succeed in that direct response TV market?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's a little bit of a complex answer. And I'll try to simplify it by basically saying to you this. I mean, I think there's a lot of smart people listening, so I won't insult your intelligence by basically saying that, you know, either people got their products on Amazon as an early adopter of Amazon, or people put their products on Amazon and they were the first in their category. So some of that behavior helped them get those reviews, helped them get that success early on. And that's my belief. Anyway, that product is not necessarily unique. And if you marketed that product on TV, it would not have the same success as it would have on Amazon or digitally. Because, for example, marshmallow sticks, you hear all of the success on marshmallow sticks and the examples of marshmallow sticks and the success on Amazon. I don't think you could put marshmallow sticks on a digital campaign or a TV campaign. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I wasn't aware that marshmallow sticks were a big thing. Are they a big thing on Amazon?
I actually was just reading an article about how someone made $500,000 in a short period of time, you know, by being one of the pioneers of marshmallow sticks on Amazon. So it was a very, you know, interesting article for me.
Now all of our listeners are going to go out and buy a few crates of marshmallow sticks and throw them up on Amazon, and that entire market's going to be ruined.
Exactly. No, I mean, I think that, you know, in general, I would say to you this, what fascinated me, Mark, in our conversations and when we were going through, I mean, you know, we saw the writing on the wall 2 years ago, you know, in the direct response business. And what I mean by that is that, like I said, you saw this quick evolution of all of a sudden 10% of the people that saw your commercial on TV bought from the web. All of a sudden it's at 50%, 60%. In addition to that, you saw 20% of your orders actually going to Amazon. So we saw it being very difficult. I mean, you go into a TV advertising campaign with a goal of breaking even. But if you lost 20 cents on the dollar, you know, 30 cents on the dollar, you would know in the old world, okay, that you'd get that money back because you'd air a lot of TV. And you actually would, you know, see a lot of people go to the retail store and you'd get an 8-to-1 ratio. So for every one person that bought on your TV ad and called in through the phone or jumped on the web, you'd see 8 people buy at retail. So those numbers started changing rapidly. And when you and I started talking, it was when it clicked to me and said, well, there's a couple things. One is that we had a couple product campaigns that, you know, we developed, you know, spent a lot of money on Facebook trying to develop a campaign. We sold 100,000 units of one product on Facebook alone. Okay. A lot of those people got a brand awareness very quickly of, you know, of our product just in an online basis. That does not necessarily translate to retail at all. What had happened was that we saw that, you know, Amazon brought in like unwanted competition. You've heard all about that. You know, unwanted competition. You traditional direct response TV, we spend a couple $1 million in a very short period of time advertising for our product. And then we'd be shipping in $500,000, you know, units overseas. So now everybody overseas is getting alerts, and anybody that tracks imports is getting alerts on what had, you know, what products being the most successful. We're airing this stuff on TV. You have international competition coming in and putting your product, your brand, up on Amazon right away with lower prices, maybe not the same quality. And we saw major impacts happening to, you know, we weren't able to market the same way. So that 20% or that 10 cent loss, that 20 cent loss on the dollar started becoming 50 cent losses on the dollar. And we had to figure out different ways to market our products. And you had to look at it more holistically. You had to look at Amazon digital and really start playing a different game, you know? And I think that when you and I started talking and I started seeing these Amazon centric companies, where they were only living inside the Amazon atmosphere. And I'm sitting there saying, some of these products are awesome. Some of these product lines are great. Why haven't they tested some of these other channels? You know, I can see that maybe they tested a little bit of digital, you know, because once I clicked on their website, they started following me around to Words with Friends, Facebook, Instagram, everywhere. You know, they didn't really have any type of marketing dollars or marketing spend outside of the Amazon atmosphere. So the reality is that I just see this as a huge opportunity for any of the FBA type companies that are sitting out there to say, hey, what other channels can I market to really explode this business and really put my business on steroids? I think you know, and I know, and you know better than me for sure, that those multiples that are being paid on these businesses, you know, when you put them up for sale, I think that if they have more of an omni-channel approach towards things, if they have a good Facebook presence, if they have a lot of Facebook followers that are out there, I think it just makes their platform that much stronger and that business much more saleable.
Yeah. There hasn't been a whole lot of crossover between these silos in the past, right? We've really kind of stayed true to the one areas. And part of this is just because of the opportunity that exists. And in talking to sellers and business owners who are working in the Amazon space, their businesses are growing rapidly without having to go outside. But I do think that looking outside of Amazon, whether it be through digital marketing, and I know a lot of our clients are starting to do that, but also into these more traditional areas, is the way that we need to stay ahead of that curve, right? We all know we have to stay ahead of the competitive curve. What are some examples of lift that you've seen from applying this omni-channel focus? And I apologize, I didn't prep you for this question. So if you don't have numbers off the top of your head, that's fine. But I just want to get a sense for, you know, what are we looking at here by exploring this option of omni-channel marketing? And especially when we're looking at going outside of Amazon, but even outside of the internet as well, and into more traditional forms of marketing?
No, it's an excellent question. And although you did not prep me for it, it is something that we live in every single day. So I'll try to answer it in a couple of different ways. First of all, I would say to you that if you are an Amazon-centric company, let me focus on that first, and you are not taking advantage of some of the digital or traditional DRTV, direct response TV channels, I would say to you this. So the curve in the direct response industry, TV industry, is about 18 months. So in 18 months, that's your kind of your life cycle. And traditionally, it's been that type of a life cycle because you get this grand awareness of this product with you're ahead of the competition. And you try to outrun the competition by just flooding the market with a bunch of products. So, you know, some of our products in that 18-month life cycle yielded, you know, $6, $10, $15, $20 million worth of revenue during that short window of time. Okay, so if you have access to inventory, if you have access to product, if it is a DRTV type of a product, I think an 18-month window and developing several million dollars worth of revenue is very obtainable. The other piece of that is this: for those products that do not work on direct response TV, and you know, really you test into the digital ecosystem, there's a lot of companies, and I think everybody will agree that Facebook is your workhorse in that spectrum. However, if you go about it in some of the more scientific ways and try to figure out where your audience is, whether you're doing some, you know, display banner types ads to learn who your audience is and where to target better. We've seen some of those companies that, you know, they may have been exploring to try and get into retail. They weren't there yet, but they decided, let me try to play holistically on the digital side first. We've seen some of those companies in a matter of 3 to 6 months generate, you know, quick, huge revenues and be what we call a double return on your investment. You know what I mean? A double return on your investment on the marketing side of things, maybe a triple return on your investment inside of 3 to 6 months, okay, with a nice digital plan, okay? The amount of traction that you wind up getting at retail, if you're able to get into traditional retail, we know how hard it is to get in traditional retail, but the amount of lift that you get could be easily 50% lift at traditional retail when you're running some type of direct response, maybe in combination with a digital TV type of campaign, because you can geo-target, right? We can figure out exactly where your products are being sold and geo-target that as well. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, that definitely helps. So I have one more question for you. And, you know, I've played around with radio advertising for one of my other companies. And the general rule that I kept hearing over and over with the radio ads was, look, you need to run it for 3 months. You need to have the right saturation and frequency in order for it to really take effect. Do you have that same effect with television ads? Does it take time before you start seeing that lift?
Absolutely. It's impressions. Everything's based off of impressions, and you need a certain amount of impressions across a broad audience and to a specific audience in order to get them to buy. So, you know, there is a science to that our media buyers actually play with on a regular basis. And a great example of that is kids' items. All right, children's items. We always call it the nag factor. So you really want to put those impressions inside of a child's head. So they go to mom and dad and they basically say, Mom, I want that. Mom, I want that. A lot of our media for kids' items is 60-second spots, 30-second spots. So you're just really driving everybody to impressions and driving them to retail. They're all still direct response, you know, type of ads, but you're really trying to get the impressions in their head, get the nag factor going, and really get them to buy.
That's fantastic. All right. If somebody wants to learn more about this, where can they reach you?
StarLogic Marketing is the name of my company. You know, as I said, I just started the company up a couple months ago. My phone number is 215-694-3118. You can look me up on LinkedIn. I have all my LinkedIn information. Website is still being built and will be finalized in the next hopefully couple of weeks here. But StarLogic Marketing is the name of the company. We do think that this omni-channel type of approach is a way for you to really put your products and your product lines on steroids and jump outside of just the Amazon ecosystem and really take advantage of the more omni-channel marketing opportunities.
Yeah, I think there's all sorts of benefits for Amazon sellers. And I think those that have been in the game for a while might be thinking in their heads of some of these things. I'm thinking sales velocity, for one, being able to really power up the number of sales of launching new products as well would be another benefit that I definitely see with this. And really fascinating concept. And I think probably the way that we're going to see things go. I had a couple of additional questions for you, but I think we're running out of time at this point. So thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I do appreciate it and hope to have you on again in the future.
Thanks, Mark. I really hope it was of value to your audience. I do think that there is a great opportunity for the people that you're speaking with on a regular basis to really help improve the opportunity to sell their businesses by leveraging all of these different types of media. So thank you for having me on, and look forward to the next time we get to talk.
Thanks, Sean.
Take care.
Today's podcast was produced by Podcast Motor and the Quiet Light Content Team. If you have a suggestion for a future podcast, or if you want to guess the quote from the beginning of the show for a chance at getting a shout out on the pod, email us at podcast@quietlightbrokerage.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and this show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.